Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's and Word. We are in Job chapter number 2. Now, this is the story of a man who had been very wealthy and who had been blessed by God and worshiped God and lived for God, and then suddenly he lost everything, including his health. Now, he's not aware of the backstory that has been provided through the writing of the author of the book of Job, which you already know, I think it's probably the prophet Moses. The backstory is that Satan has been given permission by God to push Job up to the very edge of his breaking point. Not over it, but to the fringe of it. And that God is confident that Job will continue to trust him. And so, up to this point in the story, Job has not said a thing in violation of his relationship with God. He continues to trust him. Even when his own wife urges him to curse God and die, he says, "No, don't talk like that. I'm going to accept the bad things of life just like I accept the good things of life. I'm going to trust God." And the author says that in his response to these matters of tragedy, Job doesn't sin. He remains faithful. The next thing that happens in the book is friends show up. Now, when we use the word friends, I think it should be understood that it's maybe a little bit more broad than we would think of in our life. These could be business associates, which I actually think they probably are business associates, that hear of his dilemma and come to commiserate with him. Verse 11 of chapter 2 says this: "Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him," so the loss of his business, the loss of his family, the loss of his health, all in a short period of time, possibly a year, but certainly a very bad part of his life. Says they each came from his own place. So they don't all live in the same place. They live elsewhere. That's one of the reasons I think we're talking about business associations. Eliphaz the Temanite, which tells us that he is from the area of Edom, which is another reason to believe that Uz is nearby. Bildad the Shuhite, which I don't think that we can pin that down as easily as to where it is, other than the name shows up in relationship to Midian in another passage. And so we know that Midian, the country, is just immediately south of Edom. And then Zophar the Naamathite. And Naamath is found in the genealogy of Esau. And so this is another good reason why we can kind of tie this to a time period after the book of Genesis is wrapped up, when these are people groups rather than people. So these are his three acquaintances. There's a fourth one that is not introduced here, which tells us that he does not have a rank with these guys. He is a junior member of Job's circle. We'll talk about him when he shows up later. So these three made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort. So their original intention is to come and just kind of grieve with him, be sad with him over all the bad things that have happened, and to encourage him. But when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. So he is a shell of a man. If you can imagine that he probably stopped eating well once the first tragedies happened with the loss of his properties and people and then his family. So he's probably dropped a whole bunch of weight. He is not performing regular hygiene to take care of himself, and so that is making him look pretty bad. He has shaved the hair of his head and probably his beard off in grief. He is laying in ripped up clothing in dust and ashes, which he's probably putting up on his head on a regular basis because this is part of the grieving process in that part of the world. And he's also broken out with open sores all over his body and maggot infested. And he's having to kind of scrape them clean on a regular basis with potsherds. So he is a mess. He is a pitiable figure. If in your mind's eye you can kind of picture some of the men in the videos and the pictures of the concentration camps of Nazi Germany when they were being rescued. Those were pitiable figures and in bad physical shape. This man, Job, should be imagined in that situation plus worse. And so when they see this friend of theirs, this acquaintance of theirs, this business partner of theirs, they raised their voices and they wept, they cried, they were stricken in their hearts emotionally for this guy. And they tore their own robes and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And then they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights. And no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. Now, up to this point, they did exactly what needed to be happening to him. They just came to commiserate. They just came to be a presence, crying with him, grieving with him, fasting with him, praying for and with him. If they'd stopped here, everything would have been fine, but they didn't. They will feel constrained to tell him that he needs to repent. We're about to read Job's first comments about his situation in the presence of his friends. And in these comments, he makes it plain that he believes that he hasn't done anything wrong to deserve being treated like this. We get the impression from his words and from the words of his friends that it was commonly believed among religious peoples of this period that God was responsible for everything that happened. And that if something bad happened, it was a punishment from God. And that extrapolating from that, they believe that only bad things happen to bad people, and only good things happen to good people. Now, we all know that that is demonstrably not accurate. But this was kind of their way of thinking. And so when Job kind of gets cured of that by the fact that he knows he hasn't done anything wrong, and yet these bad things happen to them or to him, he begins to grieve over that fact, and they feel that they need to correct him, to tell him that instead of claiming his innocence, he needs to fess up to whatever secret sins he must have been involved in for God to do all of this bad stuff to him. So that's the structure of the middle section of the book, which is the largest section of the book, the conversations between Job and his friends. And this is one of the reasons I told you in the first section, the introductory session to this book, we've got to be very careful in evaluating the wording of this section of the book, because it contains an awful lot of fallible human assertions that can be shown from elsewhere in the scripture to not be true. And so we've got to be Bereans as we read the book here. There's a lesson to be learned from it, at the end of the book, God chides Job for letting his emotions get the best of him and start demanding of God answers. But he condemns the friends that we're going to read soon for them saying sinful accusations. Okay, with that reminder of the background, and I'll probably repeat that quite a bit as we proceed, let's go ahead and start reading from Job's own words. So after this, after the 7 days since his friend showed up, Job opened his mouth and he cursed the day of his birth. Job said, "Let the day perish on which I was born, and the night that said, 'A man is conceived.'" It's apparently not just his birthday that he would like stricken off the calendar, but the day that his mom and dad brought him into existence as a human being. Verse 4, "Let that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor light shine upon it. Let gloom and deep darkness claim it. Let clouds dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. That night, let thick darkness seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months." So he's basically saying, "I pray to God that my birthday, my conception day, would be stricken from the calendar, that it would disappear out of existence, because it's the day on which I came into this world where I have been hit by such horrendous events." Verse 7, "Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful cry enter into it. Let those curse it who curse the day, who are ready to rouse up Leviathan." Now, Leviathan comes into the story in chapter 41, where God talks about this sea monster, this sea dragon, I think this sea dinosaur, actually, that was very scary if you were out in ships. Now, if the land of Uz is where I think it is, then it bordered up on the Gulf of Aqaba, which is an arm of the Indian Ocean. And so it's likely that the peoples of Uz were seafarers, or at least some of them. And so Job may have himself been out on ships, but certainly he would have heard of people that had been out on ships and run across some of these gigantic sea monsters. And so he says, let those cursed who curse the day, who are ready to rouse up Leviathan, you know, the people who get scared when they run across those sea monsters and start uttering curses against this, that, and the other thing. Let the stars of its dawn be dark. Let it hope for light, but have none, nor see the eyelids of the morning. Don't you just love that language there, the eyelids of the morning, which would be those first rays that are kind of winking off the horizon as the sun is starting to reach the point of dawn. So he says, let it be just totally dark, no light whatsoever. Verse 10, because it did not shut the doors of my mother's womb, nor hide trouble from my eyes. So the day offended the calendar because it was the day on which his mom gave birth and brought him into this world where he ran into all this trouble. Why did I not die at birth, come out from the womb, and then expire? You know, why couldn't I have just come into this world and this died instantly? Why did the knees receive me? Why did the breasts that I should nurse? And then I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept. Then I would have been at rest with kings and counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, who filled their houses with silver. It says, I would have been so much better off to die right after birth, because then my body would have been laid into the ground and my spirit would have been at rest wherever all the other people are at. Or, he says this, why was I not as a hidden stillborn child, as infants who never see the light? So now he's talking about a stillbirth, never being able to cry at all, just being delivered already dead. Perhaps a spontaneous abortion where the baby dies in the womb and the body goes into premature labor and delivers this dead baby. He says, why couldn't I have been that? There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. So he gets focused in his verbiage here on the idea that people who die early are like people who die later. They're out of this world. Their bodies are in the tombs, and their spirits are somewhere else. And they're not facing all of this tragedy, this disaster that I'm being overwhelmed with. It's his way of expressing with great verbosity, I'd rather be dead. Why can't I just die and get it over with? Then there the prisoners are at ease together. They hear not the voice of the taskmaster. So the working people, or the people that are slaves, the people that are hard labor prisoners, when they're dead, they don't have to go to work. Their troubles are over. Verse 19, the small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Why is light given to him who is in misery, and life to the bitter in soul? So why am I still alive? Why am I still seeing daylight here when I am so in pain and misery and my soul hurts so bad and I'm so heartbroken? Why am I still alive? Verse 21, who long for death, but it comes not. So he wants to die, but he can't. And notice that he never talks about suicide, because as a follower of God, he considers life to be a great gift from God, and so he would never want to take that gift away. Now, he is miserable thinking about the idea that God is the one letting all this stuff happen to him. And he wishes that God would just let him go. Let me die. And we'll see him phrase it in different ways throughout all of his words. Who rejoice exceedingly, excuse me, I skipped one, verse 21. Who long for death, but it comes not. They dig for it more than for hidden treasures. Who rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they find the grave. So why can't I die like people looking for treasure? I'm looking for death. Why can't I find it? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For my sighing comes instead of my bread, and my groanings are poured out like water. So I talked about the idea that he is clinically depressed here. He is not eating right. He is just consumed with his grief and his pain and his sorrow. And so he is not eating on a regular schedule. He's just focused on his pain. And he groans and moans all the time. And this is a situation that many people find themselves in because of physical illness or because of mental illness. And I want to encourage you, if you're hearing this by the grace of God, I don't want you to be consumed with that same feeling of hopelessness that Job has here. I want you to go out and find someone or respond to the overtures of someone that wants to help you. There are friends and family members that I'm sure love you and want to help you. I am sure that there are people at your church or your pastor or someone that would love to come in and grieve with you and let you talk to them about how you're feeling. And I have zero doubt that there are professionals in the physical arts and in the medical arts and in the mental health arts that are ready to take your call and to make those appointments for you to come in and lay it all out before them so that they can find a way to help you. Don't just stick to yourself and wish for death and wish it would all go away. Let someone help. Okay? That's my encouragement. Verse 25, for the thing that I fear comes upon me, what I dread befalls me. I'm not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, but trouble comes. So he says, I am in the midst of a nightmare. The worst things that I could imagine being afraid of have all happened to me. Now, all of us as parents, we know how it is to be afraid for your kids. I have no doubt that all of you will understand this confession for me. More than once, when my son Adam was growing up, I would stop by his room at night after he'd gone to bed and just watch to make sure he was breathing. That's just a parent thing. And so the fear of the loss of your kids is something that Job probably already had in his life. And now it's come to pass, not just for one kid, but for 10 of them. The fear of failure in business, the loss of your job, the loss of your company going, you know, belly up and folding is a reality a lot of people look at in their business life. That's happened to him. The loss of your home, the place where you live, he's faced all of that. And he says, all of the things that I fear the most, they've come on me, including the loss of my own health. And, you know, the older I get, the more I wrestle with that. You know, the aches and the pains, you worry about, is this going to turn into this, or is that a symptom of that? And how is this all going to end in the end? You know, it's one thing to say, I'm not afraid of dying and being in the presence of the Lord. It's another thing to say, I'm not afraid of the process. See, is it going to hurt much? But here is Job saying, the thing that I fear, it's all come on me. And so I'm not at ease. And I can't be quiet. I can't rest. I've got all this trouble. So that's how he talks to his friends after 7 days of silence. He opens up and lets them see his heart, how he feels. And you know what they do instead of comforting him? They accuse him. And that's where this book goes sideways. That's where in this book I get frustrated and angry. And it's also the reason why I get really ticked off when I see some of my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ saying things to people in times of stress and trial and trouble and turmoil and disaster, things that only hurt, not help. And so I beg you, my friends, if you find yourself engaging someone that is in great sorrow and anguish, don't give them platitudes, and most certainly don't accuse them of being under the judgment of God, because that's not going to help. Feel with them. Pray with them. Listen to them. Help them find real help. Because we need to do unto others as we would have them do unto others, unto us. And certainly, we wouldn't want anybody to jump on us with both feet when we were already in dire straits. Mark your place. We'll get back into the Word next time we have opportunity.